Welcome to Bee's Table Talk, the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce podcast program, new in 2019. I'm your host, Bee Kyle, President and CEO. My co-host today is Steve Schemenauer, an attorney and partner at Stinson Leonard Street, as well as an Army colonel with more than 27 years of service. He's currently the brigade commander for the 347th Regional Support Group, Minnesota Army National Guard. We are very excited to bring this programming to you. Throughout the year, we meet fascinating, accomplished people, always willing to talk with us, but not necessarily available to fit into our events schedule. And this podcast program is our attempt to capture these conversations and share them with our membership and the broader employer community, and through a medium that fits our increasingly mobile lifestyles. Today we are featuring retired Brigadier General Carol Eggert, currently the Senior VP of Military and Veteran Affairs at Comcast NBC Universal. Comcast is headquartered in Pennsylvania, but we have a very strong regional office in St. Paul with close to 2,600 employees here, a strong minority of whom are veterans. As a veteran myself, I see this as a very strategic priority for Comcast because we bring extraordinary skills and commitment to the workplace. So welcome, General. Thank you for being here.
I'm honored to be here. It's great to have this opportunity to share what we're doing at Comcast.
Great. Thank you. We're going to keep this very relaxed because we really want to hear from you. And can you first of all tell us about your last role in active duty and how you wound up at Comcast?
I retired from the Army in the end of 2014, 2015, beginning in 2015, and I thought I was retired. I had collected my pension. That's a nice thing. And I wasn't looking for a job, but I got a call from Comcast about this new initiative to engage the military community. And what do we as veterans always do when you're asked to help or do something? We say yes. And so I said, of course, I'll come in and we'll put together a strategy and implement a program to engage the community, the military community, across our entire footprint. And this includes NBC Universal also. So the parks, the studios, and the news up at 30 Rock. So I often say I wasn't looking for a job. I wasn't looking for a position, but I found a purpose.
That's very exciting. I have to tell you, as I was reading your bio, before the podcast, we all three were sharing military stories, Steve and Carol more relevantly than I, but I was looking at our bios, and you were a distinguished military grad in 1985, and I graduated in 1986. Oh. You were a second lieutenant in 1985, and I started in 1986, and we both made it to captain in 1990. So that's kind of a nice tie in there.
Nice parallel.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us, I know we'd like to talk a lot about the veteran community in the workplace. And before we do that, can you tell us a little bit about your career and a story about your most rewarding tour and why?
Well, I'll touch on the bios you just gave us. What you're being so kind to omit is that I actually started in 1972 as an enlisted soldier with the Women's Army Corps Band. So I was in a segregated army, segregated by gender. So you can imagine I have some stories. I then went on to go to Officer Candidate School and received my commission in 1985, but that is post a good 12 years of enlisted time. So you ask, you know, why did I join the military at 17? And like many veterans, I come from a family of 8 children, and it was the GI Bill. The GI Bill is an incredible benefit that can change our society and actually did change our society after World War II. And I joined for the GI Bill, but also I played the French horn in high school. And I wanted to continue with music. And I was not a prodigy that could go into one of the symphonies.
Nice.
But this was a place to play. There was only one opening in the Women's Army Corps Band. It was the scariest audition I've ever done, but I was accepted in. And I went on to play in the band and travel and bring music to communities. So what a great start for a 17-year-old. And when I finished that, I went on to college.
Very nice. Thank you for that.
So, ma'am, you know, there are events in our lives where we can all remember exactly where we were. And so I'm curious, where were you on 9/11?
On 9/11, I was a member of the Pennsylvania National Guard. So my career is both active duty, civilian jobs, and then guard and reserve time. So some people might say I could never hold a job. I switched components so many times. But on 9/11, I was actually at home. My children were at school. And, you know, you watch the news, and I immediately went and got my children. And like many veterans, the first thing you're thinking is, I need to get ready to go support. So, yes, it is a transformative moment. Now, being older than both of you, I can also remember when Kennedy died and was shot and was assassinated. And I was in fourth grade, and that was also a transformative moment. So maybe that's when I started thinking about something bigger and about the country and how these events can actually change the course of a country.
Well, I'm looking at both of you and smiling because you have some touch points in your active duty time I would love to share with our listening audience. Steve, can you introduce how you two know one another?
Sure. So then Colonel Eggert and I worked together. We were both deployed to Iraq, and now General Eggert. I was stationed in Basra with the 34th Infantry Division, Red Bulls, and General Eggert was an augmentee from the Pennsylvania Guard. And ma'am, if I recall correctly, you were working with the Female Initiative and the PRTs at the time, correct?
So it's an interesting thing, and many folks don't understand augmentees and how does an individual person get attached to another unit. But when I heard the Red Bulls were deploying and they needed a colonel that could handle some of those assignments, what do you do? Once again, you say, whatever you need, you say yes. And I was originally assigned as a liaison to the U.S. Embassy for the 34th. What a great assignment. And I then moved on. I was asked to stay on and support the provincial reconstruction team. So think of those as the State Department folks that are out within the country building up Iraq. And so I was a liaison to help explain what the military does, what the State Department does, and to try to bring those two together. Because like silos everywhere, there were silos there. And what's interesting is the military had the money. The Department of Defense had the money. The State Department had the rebuilding mission. But we had to work together so that the Army didn't put a school in the middle of nowhere where the State Department wasn't trying to build relationships. So it was fascinating to bring that together. I also then went on to support the Iraqi Ministry of Women's Affairs in their economic, social, and political empowerment of women and advising them on how they could work with the U.S. Department of State as well as the military and how we could all work together. So programs, economic programs, many of the men had been lost. So these are women trying to support their family. So think fish farms, honey farms, and how do we help them put those things into place? So it was an incredible tour, but it was also very challenging, you know, but also to be there when they got the vote, how incredible that was. You know, the picture of people holding up their finger, showing that they had been voted and had the inked finger, and to see women who voted. So very rewarding experience.
What were some observations as a woman that you took away from in that transition as you were experiencing Iraqi women learning about freedom and what that meant?
Well, what many folks don't understand is actually in Saddam Hussein's reign, it was a very progressive country. It fell apart afterwards because we had to rebuild it. What I thought was rather amusing is when the Reconstruction government came in, the U.S. sponsored government, we started to build the government in Iraq. It was mandated that, I believe it was about 35% in Congress had to be women in the Iraqi Congress. And I got nothing but a chuckle out of that since we didn't even have that here in the United States. And I'm trying to figure out, okay, why can we mandate that at another country when we are not doing it? So to see those discrepancies, but also to see how women will work to stabilize their families and stabilize the economy. And Hillary Clinton played a large role in this, in that she tasked the State Department to ensure they had programs to empower women, because she recognized that you will not stabilize a country if you don't stabilize the women and the families. So to be part of that, I actually helped prepare a brief for Hillary Clinton on what those efforts were. So very, very rewarding. And I know, as you understand, when you've served in combat, you come back with a completely different perspective on how lucky we are here. Not lucky, but how fortunate we are and how hard we work, how messy this democracy can be. but it's one that we need to support. And you have a tolerance for the democratic process. And you also realize you must play a role in that democratic process.
It's not a perfect process, but it's the best one out there, right?
And even if it's not the best one, it's one that we all need to participate in to make it the best one.
I agree
with you. And I think that's one thing veterans bring. They're willing and able and educated to be part of the system. And studies will show you that veterans participate in their communities at a higher rate than non-veterans. And I think it's that sense of service that never leaves you.
So, ma'am, you started out enlisted in the regular Army, and I'm curious, how did you make the transition from enlisted soldier to an officer in the Guard, and what's the difference between them?
Well, many folks, when they join the service, it's for self-serving reasons. The GI Bill, get out of town, get new experiences, what does the Navy say, explore the world. But something happens as you continue to serve where you realize this is part of something bigger. So when I was about an E6, and for those in the audience, that's a staff sergeant, so maybe 10 years in, I was recruiting. I was part of the recruiting command in Chester, Pennsylvania, which is one of our most poverty-stricken cities. And while recruiting in Chester, I saw how the military can give families and individuals a chance to break the cycle of poverty. Now, we can have a whole nother podcast on why does it have to be the military to break the cycle of poverty, but in fact, it changed lives. And I saw that this is something much bigger, national security, changing communities. And that's when I decided to go to Officer Candidate School and continue to serve as a commissioned officer, because I thought at that point I had more to give. In a commissioned role with leadership responsibility. So I went to Officer Candidate School and went on to serve 25 years of commissioned service.
And so in order to make Brigadier General, you've obviously had a lot of different roles and responsibilities, and you must have commanded at some point. So could you tell us a little bit about your command time?
Well, and I'll start with saying, and I suspect you are just like me, you're a colonel. I never thought about, I want to make general, I want to make colonel, I want to be a lieutenant colonel. I just thought about how can I give more, how can I contribute more, how can I make a difference? And of course, part of that is your educational requirements, staying up on all of that so you can contribute. So I never sought rank. I sought responsibility and the opportunity to give back. So I never think about, oh, I made general. I just think I had the opportunity to serve in different positions. But yes, you're right. I was smart enough to know in order to serve in those different positions, command is the penultimate of what we do. Being able to impact the lives of those who we are responsible for. So yes, command is one of the most rewarding. I purposely picked a branch that had the opportunity for command. And as a woman, I was the first maintenance company commander, the first maintenance battalion commander. So you can imagine there's challenges there, but, well, and I'll go back. I was actually pregnant as the first maintenance company commander. So I had children while I served. But what I found is people embrace anybody who can do their job and who care about them and will ensure that we take care of the mission and we take care of the people. I love that phrase, mission first, people always. And if you live by that, everything else falls into place. So command was very rewarding. So thank you for that question.
And I'd like to hear more about, looking through your bio, I saw some very honorable awards that not every soldier earns. Are you willing to share with us the story behind your Bronze Star and your Purple Heart?
I'll start by saying that anyone who raises their hand is willing to earn a Purple Heart. It's not something anyone aspires to. But it's one that everyone is willing to put their life in danger on behalf of their country. So yes, I received a Purple Heart because I was in an explosion, an EFP. Many people think of IEDs, improvised explosive devices. Our vehicle was attacked by a EFP, which is a explosively formed projectile that cut right through our vehicle. And I was on a transport vehicle. I knew no one else on the vehicle. If you can say it was a rewarding experience, it was, because I saw how training just jumped right in. We had folks, and it actually was a female gunner that immediately took charge to make sure the area was secure. I am still colleagues today with those of whom we call our Alive Day, which is the day you didn't die. And that near-death experience, I think, changes your perspective on life and your ability to tolerate all kinds of things. And what once may have been important is now very petty. And one of those being our democracy. You're much more tolerant of the messy democracy. You're much more tolerant of squabbles. You realize just how important things are. And so we still get together and connect every August 21st with those folks. And we changed it from Alive Day to Gratitude Day, the day you remember just how much we all have to be grateful for and how we have a responsibility to help other countries less fortunate than ours.
You've said this a number of times in our conversation this morning before we started the podcast and during. You've talked about how rewarding it is to be a soldier, to be a service member, and how some of your, frankly, worst experiences, combat, you know, being wounded, were rewarding. And I think a lot of our listeners would probably think that seems odd, right? Because I've echoed that same sentiment. I've not been wounded, thankfully, but I have been to Afghanistan and Iraq. And I often tell people that it's one of the worst experiences in my life, but they were also the most rewarding for a whole host of reasons. But I'd like to know how you feel that translates, that service translates to our listeners who are thinking about hiring veterans. What do you see as the primary advantages of hiring veterans for any business, small, medium, or large?
Well, there's many of the standard ones that we all talk about, but you just ask about combat. And I think many veterans return from combat enhanced with an understanding of the challenges and the criticality of responsibility for their people, for life and limb and education. So they come back with an understanding and a much broader aperture and perspective on working with people. But when we think about veterans and in the workforce, they'll work for a purpose, for a meaningful position. So I think we as employers need to be very careful that we are clear on the why. There's a great book out there called Start With Why. Help veterans understand why they're doing what they're doing. Many people think, and veterans sometimes get this mixed up, that profit is the dark side. Well, I have learned from our time at the War College and our time in senior education that a strong, robust economy contributes to our national security. So when veterans are employed and contribute to the success of a company, they are contributing to the national security of this country. When I joined Comcast, some of my colleagues said, oh, you're going to the dark side, the for-profit, as if you're evil. But our profit companies, the companies, your membership, they are patriots because they are building a strong economy that keeps us safe. There are those who threaten what we have every day, and a strong economy is one way to ward off those threats. So I think if our employers think about the perspective our veterans have when they come out, the other thing I would caution about is there is no one single profile of veterans. We have us, who have served 25 years or continue to serve, so understanding your Guard and Reserve, there are those first-time, term of service that get out, like the 24-year-olds or the 25-year-olds. And by the way, we have an unemployment issue with veterans that is getting improving by day, which actually today, when you lump all veterans together, is lower than the national average for unemployment. But there are pockets of veterans, those young enlisted that have never had a first job or even officers. So we have to understand that we're not all the same, and we have many different years of experience and experiences that we bring to the job. Women veterans is another challenged group, helping them own their place in the warrior ethos so that they can stand up as veterans. So employers just need to know that it's not one profile of veterans. Let's make sure we understand them. And I would love to talk about some of the things we've done to support our businesses to increase military acumen of the military community.
Well, let's get into that because we're very interested in that and sharing some of these amazing resources with our membership And the first thing that comes to mind as I look at all of the work that you're doing with Comcast is the Internet Essentials program and its expansion to low-income veterans across Comcast footprint. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, Comcast has had a long-standing commitment to reduce the digital divide for low-income families, for those in HUD housing. And I brought to consideration that we've got veterans in low-income status that have a special need. They may not identify as a low-income family, but we need to reach out to these veterans because it's the internet that will change their access to the VA, their access to jobs.
Education.
So much is done online now that if they don't have digital access, they're going down that stream that we're trying to prevent people from going down. So we increased our program this year to include low-income veterans. We work with the VA. They're very active now with telemedicine. So if you don't have internet access, you can't participate in telemedicine. So we have offered low-cost internet to low-income veterans. We just launched it this August, and we're just honored to partner with the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, MACV.
I'm looking and smiling at Steve because he is the current chair of MACV. Another reason we're glad he's here.
And they're a great resource, and they have access to the veterans who most need this. So, Steve, I'll ask you to just chat a bit about MACV and how important these local partnerships are.
They're incredibly important. And, you know, Comcast has been a great partner for our organization. The Internet Essentials program that you spoke about has provided significantly reduced internet access and affordable laptops for many of our clients. And Comcast also provided 15 of our SIL House veterans with laptops at the Military Appreciation Day at the State Fair. So you all have been a great partner, and we're very appreciative of what you continue to do for us.
And even though we have a national footprint, I know that all things are local. So we work with our local community groups in all of our 15 regions and our three divisions, as well as with NBC, to ensure that we're supporting those groups that can make the difference. But on a national scale, we've done some other things that I'd like to chat about if...
Please do.
If you have some time. One thing we've done, and these are specifically for your members. So recognizing that we're not all as lucky as we at Comcast. I'm just thrilled to be part of a company that has given us a team of 8 people, all with military background. I report to the president and CEO of Comcast, as well as to the COO of NBC, which might have been a dumb thing for me to do, to take a job with 2 different bosses. But can you imagine that kind of support? A budget, a team of 8. But because of that, I feel a very strong responsibility to support other companies and to empower them to engage the military community when they might not have the time, the resources, the people to create a whole department engaged in supporting the community. So we created what's called the Comcast Employer School, and I know you're going to put this on your website so people know how to access it. This is online targeted content at no cost for employers. Simple content on how to set up a military hiring program, how to build veteran-owned businesses into your supply chain, how to understand USERRA and work with your Guard and Reserve employees, 15 things every veteran wants you to know. Short, targeted, don't feel like you're signing up for a 4-year degree. Please take a look at this, and we'll make sure you have the information to do that. We did it because we understand that 80% of veterans are hired by small to medium businesses. It's not the Comcast, the USAA. So we need to take the lead in a different way, and we've done that.
We're interested in more about this being certified veteran friendly. Isn't that a recognition that's been given to Comcast?
So another thing that we've done is try to come up with programs that support our HR and our talent acquisition professionals. These folks often have continuing education requirements to maintain their certifications in this professional field. So we worked with SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management, and we created a Veterans at Work certificate program for TA, HR, but really, quite frankly, anybody, that they could take courses, take a short quiz at the end, and verify that they have an understanding of what it requires to engage the military community and become certified as Veterans at Work friendly. And we also, for your membership out there, created a playbook in partnership with SHRM and Syracuse University, which is an incredible resource. They have their whole department of military families, and they do great research. But in partnership with them, we created a playbook for companies, the recruitment, hiring, retention, and engagement of military veterans, and how to build that into your DNA. So a great, think of it as a how-to book, and how to increase your military hiring, how to engage with your foundations, you know, understanding that there is a gap. So I'll address that CivMil gap, civilian-military divide, gap, knowledge gap, whatever you want to call it. Less than 1% serve now, which that's just a result of the draft has gone away, which is a good thing. But what it's causing is we in the military tend to stay behind the gates and talk to those that understand us. And the civilian sector wants very much to understand the military, but they're busy and they're not part of their daily life. So we have to help empower and educate about the military community. So we will engage in research and put out studies to help the civilian sector. And one that we did in partnership with CNAS, the Center for New American Security, is a study on Lost in Translation, the Civilian-Military Divide in Veteran Employment. We brought in HR professionals and said, okay, tell us about hiring veterans. And they all came out and said, we love the military. We think veterans are great, but they don't quite fit within our culture. So there's so many myths that we in leadership positions have to bust, quite frankly, if we're going to change the picture of veterans and veteran employment. And MACV, with working with homeless veterans, so often in film and when cities promote the narrative that veterans are broken, are homeless, we need to also promote the positive narrative of people like you who are serving their community as well as serving the Minnesota National Guard, understanding what that takes for you to give to both, to be a member of the community and taking a leadership role to help lessen that divide. So we need to all tell the positive story on veterans and that they actually thrive and give back to their communities.
Yeah, and that's a great point, ma'am. And one thing I'd like to say is that, you know, it's not just about the veterans. I think we have to also commend our families, obviously, for their support, but also our employers, right? As you mentioned earlier, many employers of veterans are small to medium-sized companies who can't necessarily absorb or have a harder time absorbing the loss of a soldier when they're called up for active duty. And so, there are various ways that we can recognize those employers. And one of them is through an award that I know that Comcast has received recently, which is called the Freedom Award. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
It's a great initiative by the Department of Defense. It's the employer support of the Guard and Reserve. 50% of our defense forces are in the Guard and Reserve. So think about it. If a Guard member has a full-time job and serves in the Guard, and their employer gives them a hard time about leaving for duty, which job do you think they're going to quit? Not the one that supports their family. But even though they want to serve their country, they're going to leave the Guard or the Reserve. So once again, we're patriots when we support our Guard and Reservists because we maintain that 50% of our defense forces so that these individuals can do both at a very low cost to the taxpayer. So employer support of the Guard and Reserve help educate employers on what are their responsibilities to Guard and Reservists, how can they ease the burden of service as well as maintaining your civilian job. And this group, Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, reach out to them. They will certainly support you in your efforts to support your Guard and Reservists. But I know it is a burden, and I've suggested that perhaps there's tax credits for those employers who employ Guard and Reservists, because you're right, a small business can't really afford for their Guard member to leave for 6 months. It's a burden. And I know there's some research on that and what we can do. But yes, the award, so please look into the award program for ESGR and how your employers can be recognized and how you can be recognized for your support of the Guard and Reserve. We were very proud to receive the Secretary of Defense Award. But think about it. I served in the Guard. you know, it's pretty easy to make sure we inform our entire company on what that means. We worked for 2 years and visited every one of our regions to inform them about their responsibilities to the Garden Reserve and how much more we can do. Our benefits are above and beyond. We actually created, I'm proud of this, a concierge service. So when a guard member is called up to go to a tornado or a hurricane and they have to be at the armory the next day, they simply call the concierge service and say, I have to be there tomorrow. The concierge service takes care of notifying their supervisor so they don't get burdened with that responsibility to notify everybody. And not every supervisor understands the rules. And they might say, I'm sorry, you can't go tomorrow. You're on call. So we've eased the burden for our supervisors to not have to know every single in and out of Garden Reserve duty.
And a little recognition goes a long ways, right?
Yes, yes. And so I do want to thank all the employers out there as a member serving the Guard and on active duty. Thank you for what you're doing to support these communities. They are essential. Once again, I go back to national defense.
So, ma'am, what's your biggest piece of advice for employers? What should our employers do to support veterans?
Well, use the resources I referenced. I think the biggest challenge is education, making sure we understand our military community and how we can best support them. Educate your workforce, reach out, and I guess maybe avoid bucketing everyone into one category of veteran so that we understand the challenges. And also, sing the praises of your military employees. They usually are really great performers. And the more we talk about this, the more they'll be employed. And it's not just an employment issue. When I was hired, I was talking to the president. Actually, he was interviewing me, and I said, well, why did you decide to hire veterans? Now, if he had said to me, well, it's the right thing to do. They need us. They've served our country. That's the least we can do. I would have walked away. But he's no dummy, which, of course, I guess that's why he's the president and CEO. He said, because that's a talent pool that we're not familiar with. Not necessarily do we know how to go out and find them, but we do know that they can enrich our business and support our mission, and we want that talent in our company. And that's the right answer. Don't do it because it's the nice thing to do. Do it because it will improve your business and support your business mission.
Well, and it will enhance their diversity and inclusion efforts, and it'll also provide a unique perspective that they may not otherwise get.
Thank you for bringing that up about diversity and inclusion. We all care about D&I, but many people think, and rightfully so, that the military is primarily white male, and it is. But they have such a commitment, and they have led the way when it comes to diversity and inclusion. With African Americans, with Hispanics. And we in the military all take training every year, and we celebrate our diverse communities and our people of color. So these individuals that come into your companies are well-schooled in the value of a diverse workforce.
Can I pause on that for just a minute to talk about diversity from the perspective of female soldiers in the military? And in November, the first female soldier made it through Army Special Forces assessment and the selection process. Tell us more about that. That is very big news. Why is that?
Well, I'll say first, I'm really glad that we opened up all career fields to women before I retired, or while I was still here, to see that journey from Women's Army Corps to women in every branch and in every career field. Because we know that diversity improves our workforce and our defense forces. And luckily, the military has always known that, and it's out of need. So it's not so much that they thought, oh, yes, this is the right thing to do. They integrated women into the total army when the draft was dropped, and they needed greater participation, and they needed to make their numbers. So maybe not always for the right reasons, but they knew that that would make their forces stronger. So to see women succeed and to be role models, and I will say to you that we as women who have served have a responsibility to work with other women veterans so that they take their, as I call it, their rightful place in the warrior ethos. We may not always feel like doing it, but we have to tell our stories, and all women have to tell their stories. They often will only tell it to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to tell it to those people who could care less. I often tell the story, I still have my general star on my car, because those decals are hard to get off, aren't they? They're about impossible.
They are indeed.
So I'll stop at a store and I'll get out of my car and someone will come up to me and say, oh, where did your husband serve?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm in somewhat of a irritated mood, I will say World War I, just to see if they can do the math.
Nice.
But then I stop and I say, no, we need to educate. And I'll explain women have a very large role in all of the military and they do incredible things. And I just lessen that divide just a little bit by taking a few seconds. So if all women can tell their story to people who may not want to hear it, I think we'll improve the situation for women, and I think the military has done a lot for women, both in society as well as for the military. So I'm very proud of what they've done.
I'm thinking about how, as I'm listening to you speak, reflecting on what my military experience brought to me at work, and I've only been in this job for about 15 months, maybe 17 months now, and I have a list of rules taped on my wall. Steve, come on over sometime. It's right there in rule number one. I tell my team, because we get wrapped up in the intensity of what we're delivering, because we are so committed to excellence, that we lose the big picture. And I've told them, nobody died today. Let's just pause there for a minute. When we are so focused on excellence, and then when we feel like we missed the mark, and then we're unnecessarily burdened by that, let's just put this in the perspective. So if there's one thing that the military brought for me is that perspective. To your point about you're being attacked and you've got to keep your cool and you've got to maintain your focus and not freak out. And perspective is really important when you're in a high-stress business environment and you've got to keep perspective on what you're doing. What are the big rocks? How are they producing? And sometimes you have to relax on some of the things that you think you should be excelling on, because nobody dies today. And if that's okay, then that's okay. And I think about that. My team is laughing at me as they hear this. And the other thing I think has been really beneficial, I think about the backwards planning that we learned in day one of the military, right? When you learn to think about, begin with the end in mind. Isn't there a famous book talking about the habits of highly effective people? When I think about 101 in the military, where they teach you about how to think and how to think about attacking a problem and organizing yourself and executing on a plan. And we even talk in my team about how you have your own area of operations, your own AO. This is your responsibility. And your job is to be the leader of your AO. And then it's your job to provide as much intel as you can to your squad leader or your commanding officer, because that person has a broader AO, and so on, all the way up the chain of command. And it offers a sense of you are empowered to be in charge of, to lead, and to represent. And then at some point you need to release, because you might not always get what you want because a different area of operations has a higher priority in that moment. Those kinds of leadership skills that you get from the military were just, for me, life-changing. And it helps a team think through how to be in charge, be a leader, no matter how big or specific is your job. So I'm just reflecting on the things that it's brought into my career. And we only have a few minutes left, but I'd like to hear one more story from you about the translation from military to civilian. What are some things, number one, a lesson you've learned that you've brought into your civilian career? And then what are you doing for fun now that you've got some more time off? Or do you?
Thank you for that. And I am going to address what you just said, because I think those are really important skills. As a leader, being calm. Your team reflects how you respond. No matter how dangerous it is, no matter if you just got blown up, your team looks to you. So that's critical, that you keep your perspective and understand the why with the end in sight. That backwards planning that we all learn is essential. It's funny, one of my colleagues just asked me yesterday, what do you miss most of the military? And I said, the disciplined thinking, the disciplined problem solving. We're not using logical fallacies to make our point. You know, being aware of that when we talk in team meetings, that, you know, you don't go off on tangents. You don't bring up the red herring. You remember in our school how we were so careful to be logical thinkers. So thanks for bringing that up. And that whole idea of situational analysis. Understand the world out there and where you fit. And I think that's a skill military bring to the table. But to answer your question, first of all, I'll answer the one, what do you do for fun? I'm so excited because I just scheduled a trip to Ottawa to skate the canals. It's 7 5 kilometers of canals are frozen all throughout the city, and they're open to skate. I've always wanted to do it, so I am going on President's Day weekend to skate the canals.
I've never even
Ottawa.
Heard of this.
Me neither.
Check it out.
Fabulous.
It's incredible. I'm so excited. I also do woodworking. I actually made pens for my team from the cutoff of our maintenance trailers. You know, it's a great tropical hardwood. And so when I left command, I gave everyone a pen made from, it's actually called purple heartwood, which is a hard tropical wood. So I love doing woodworking. So I do fit fun in there. I do fit fun in there.
Well, if you're mentioning fun, I have to mention the photo I saw of you and your Comcast team on Twitter. Looked like you were in an axe throwing competition. What was that about?
We try to do team building events or just fun events. And so we said, I let the team decide and they came up with axe throwing. And it really was fun. And it's not quite as difficult as you might think. They keep the wood wet so that it's much easier to embed the axe. So that was a fun thing to do with the team. And I think that's critical. Also, I often speak to leaders and say, you know, take time and pause to have fun. To have fun with your team. It's not all about driving forward at 1,000 miles an hour. Take time to know one another and to enjoy being together. So that was a great day.
Nice. Well, we are out of time, unfortunately. I'm hoping that we get to visit more when we're off the microphone, but we wanted to say with very deep sincerity, thank you for your time. Thank you for your service. We're grateful for all that Comcast NBC Universal has done for the broader community and military community and for us here in Minnesota. So thank you again for joining us.
And thank you for having us. And I also really respect the business community. So thank you for what you're doing to support the business community out there. And I'm glad we could play a small part in that support.
Well, from my co-host, Steve Schemenauer, and myself, I wanted to say thank you for tuning in to Bee's Table Talk. You can go to stpaulchamber.com/podcasts to listen to more episodes featuring interviews like this one. We also will provide links to the resources that General Eggert mentioned in our conversation today. So make it a great day, and we'll see you in the trenches.
Thank you so much.